Mike Solitro, thank you for coming on the podcast, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Shane. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. You have a very interesting career at the moment as a real estate attorney, consultant, coach. You're doing a lot of things to help people. And, you know, we're here to talk about some of the lessons that you like to teach people. And so I'm excited to hear what you have to say. So thanks for coming.
Yeah, for sure. And interesting is a kind word. Thank you. I usually get, you know, how did you end up doing that? Or what do you do? Or what's going on type thing. So I appreciate interesting.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to me. I mean, you know, I know some people in the real estate world and they enjoy it. And so that's great. I mean, it's a really cool field to be in. And I think, you know, you get a lot of fun maybe interactions with people, but you get to develop relationships and, you know, do good things and help people. And so it's definitely is an interesting world. Perhaps we can start off just with a sort of quick question. Like, how did you get into the coaching side of it? Like, what made you transition there?
Yeah, I've, as you mentioned, I am both an attorney and I work with a real estate brokerage. So I get to see transactions kind of from the very beginning to the very end. So I understand there's handoffs. I understand that things can go south, go wrong at many different points. So from being involved in those deals firsthand to also being a internal consultant at a Fortune 100 company where our role was to work with others and make their jobs easier, make their product that they delivered to clients, to customers, more useful, more valuable, more, you know, desirable to the end user. I kind of married those two. So being in real estate, knowing what I know best, working with other real estate professionals, there is a lot of, we call it room for improvement. So my coaching is focused in on, hey, what is your business operation? How does it look right now? And the two things that we try to do is, all right, what's working pretty well? Let's see if we can make it more efficient or make it easier for you or the end user. And what's not working well, or what are you not measuring? What are you unsure of? And can we bring that up to an effective level or to a level that you know, your clients want or are willing to pay for? So kind of seeing the benefits of streamlining an operation, putting in a valuable system, putting in something that is repeatable, that gives you kind of a consistent result. And then being in real estate for almost 20 years and seeing the many, many things that can go wrong, can change. It's one of those fields where you're just never going to know everything. There's always going to be something new to learn. So there's always an evolving landscape. So that's how that kind of came together.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so does most of your work revolve around working with organizations or working with individuals?
Yeah, my coaching is directly with, it's one-on-one, so a lot of it is individuals. I have started to have conversations with brokerages and executives, managers at those brokerages to do it for more of a group setting. But so far, it's been more one-on-one because it is very focused on the business operation of the realtor, the real estate professional. It's my coaching is not, hey, follow these couple steps and you'll three times your sales next year. It's more of a deep dive into what their day of the week, their month looks like, and then making it work for them specifically. So it can be done in a group, but it is mostly one-on-one.
That's cool. I mean, and I'm sure it's great, right? Like, as you say, there's always room for improvement and people are always looking to figure out what's the next thing that they can do to take their business or their whatever it is, take it a step forwards and figure out where the holes are or, you know, where things aren't going as well as perhaps they could be at some point. And then that's why you get, you know, cool people like you to come in and be like, hey, let me show you what's up.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, I'll have, you know, real estate's kind of an interesting, is a word again, interesting field where there are people who do really well and they're not interested in evolving, getting better, doing anything differently. It's the mindset is I'm doing well. I don't need to change anything. I don't need any outside help. No one, you know, no one knows my business better than me. So I'm not a great fit for all kind of that. That's not always the, you know, as you say it, and I had to get there myself professionally that, you know, there's always things that can be done better. So, you know, it is a good fit for many, but it's not for all.
Yeah. For sure. And, you know, I guess it works for those who want the help and not for those who don't, right? So one of the areas that you, I guess, coach on or talk about is this concept of everyday improvement, right? And it's kind of like micro improvements and that it sort of grows exponentially. How do you sort of find that play out when you deal with your clients?
Yeah, that's a good question. The thing that we kind of start off with is just the concept that, you know, in general, it's like, well, I want to be the best in, you know, in my brokerage or in my market or, you know, in the whole state. And it's like, okay, that's a good target, that's a good goal, but by definition, being the best is really hard, and it's only one person, and somebody tomorrow can be better than you, and you're no longer the best. So that not only is difficult, it's a hard target to hit, and it can be frustrating. And what guys' studies show is that if you don't hit it, you might just give up altogether. So the idea of everyday improvement is, here's where I am. I'm doing okay, well, really well, but I know I can incrementally make things better. So whether it is measuring everything you do, some things you do, measuring the outcomes, and then having checkpoints and frameworks of bringing those things forward, you can make incremental improvements and every day bring that point forward. And over time, you can see a really big difference. And while you may not be the best at any one thing, you will have most likely made a lot greater strides than you would have. You said, all right, I'm now going to be number one in my market or number one, because it's possible but not likely and more frustrating than usual.
Yeah. And it's interesting that people have that kind of mindset, right? Of like, I want to be number one. And if I'm not number one, then it's a failure. Where, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I get the rationale behind it, right? And there's that strive to be the best and for success. And but I mean, you could be doing phenomenally well, but not be number one and then still consider yourself a failure. And that's just, you know, I guess a misalignment of what's priority for you, right? And so does that come up a lot for people?
It does. And misalignment is a good way to kind of think of it, because, you know, when you say, you know, better, it's like, oh, well, that's just, you know, settling for second place, or that's just accepting mediocrity. And it's kind of the exact opposite. You want to be the best version of yourself, your output, your service or product that you're delivering to your client every day, your absolute best. But understanding that somebody might do it better than you, might do it faster than you, might do it at less of a cost than you, or just have more experience than you. So being the overall best, hard. Being your best, that's the key to kind of achieving that everyday improvement. So the alignment comes into just our understanding. It's like, well, this is not just mean be average and then keeping a little more average every day. It's like, I want to put out my best effort, and I want to do the things that I can, what I can control, and move those goalposts forward.
Yeah, and that's super important, you know, to strive to be your best at whatever it is that you're doing is a completely different way of approaching it than trying to be the best out of everyone. Which, as you say, like, okay, let's say you get there, and that might last, I don't know, a couple months, a couple years, but you're not going to stay there, because it always changes, right? The landscape's always evolving and moving, and new things and new people and innovation comes along. And so to sort of make that your primary target is to just be number one compared to everyone else, it seems like it's going to be a recipe for a self-defined failure, right? Even though in the eyes of everyone else, you're still doing phenomenally well. I mean, like, what came to mind for me is, like, you know, the sort of Uber and Lyft companies. I mean, I know it's not real estate, but, you know, let's say Uber is significantly doing much better than Lyft is, right? But Lyft is doing phenomenally well as a business, right? Making huge money, doing really good things, providing lots of people with the transport and drivers with income and just doing really good things. But if they sort of took the approach of like, well, we're not as good or better than Uber, so we're just going to quit, like that, you know, what I mean, you would look at that and be like, what are you doing? You know, don't be so silly. There's far greater things that than just trying to be the best at everything, right?
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Kind of using that, the other thing that I hadn't mentioned yet is that sometimes, and this is often for me, that when you set a goal, that goal is going to evolve or change, or that when you get there, it's not the payoff that you thought. So if your sole goal is being number one and you get there and say, huh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. This is not what I thought. It's going to change. So then having that, again, that day, that the approach that every day is going to be better, you can change or evolve with your goals. And kind of using that Uber example, you know, if Uber was like, we are going to just bring people from point A to point B, they could have just become the best, which they are, and stuck with that. But along the way, they say, hey, we can deliver food to people, or we can do other things that, you know, kind of complement our services. This is what our customers, our clients are telling us they want. So they are smart enough to evolve. So they may not be the best food delivery, the most people delivery, but they do the things that their clients are telling them they want better than most and better than their competition, that example. So that's the other thing, that, you know, your goals are probably going to change a lot, and that what you thought the end result was going to be may not give you the rewards or give you the experience that you thought. So it's okay to make those changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings us to another point about like adaptability, right? Which is crucial for success, because things do change all the time, even if you don't want them to. And they might not be the way you thought that they were going to be, as you just said. And so it's hugely important for people to be able to adapt and evolve to whatever's changing and figure out a new way forward. I guess it's like adjusting the goalposts, right?
Yeah, as we've kind of seen over the last couple of years, that you can have the most wonderful plan, have the most, you know, great business operation, but there are going to be outside factors kind of no matter what you do personally or professionally. So how you can identify when a change is needed, how you can adapt, how you can implement contingencies is of, if not most important, is really high up there for that success. Because you can spend all of your time with this is how things are going to work out, but when they don't work out, you need to be able to either quickly change or identify that this is something we need to do a little differently, or you know, we're going to have a very bad outcome.
So what's the process of like coaching people through these kinds of changes that come unexpectedly?
So the first thing that, or one of the first things we do, and it kind of falls under our problem-solving rubric, is understanding the actual why, or what is the root cause of the thing that we're trying to solve for. Because what we'll find out is a lot of times a problem will state, you know, this is happening, or this is bad, I need to change this. And it's more of a symptom of an actual problem versus, hey, this is the actual root cause or the actual why behind the problem that we need to fix. And the kind of goofy story that I'll tell or that I'll use is when I was doing an open house a few years ago, you know, setting up my open house, getting ready for the guest, everything is great. I run upstairs, put the lights on, go in the bathroom, and there's water on the floor. So what's my problem? Oh, the floor is wet. Okay, so what can I do? All right, I'm going to quickly get the water off the floor so that open house is ready. Floor is dry, you know, throw the towels, paper towels away. Good, we're good to go. Problem, floor is wet. Solution, floor is now dry, no more problem, right? No. So half an hour goes by, people are coming in, oh, there's water all over the floor. So my actual problem was that there's a leaking pipe, not that there's water on the floor. So if I don't fix the pipe, my problem's gonna keep coming back. So we will kind of do a deep dive into their business to figure out, is this a symptom of something else, or is this actually the problem? So when we figure out what it actually is, it's a lot easier to solve. I forget who the quote is, but you know, a good problem statement is a half solved type thing. That if you can really understand what's wrong, you're that much closer to fixing it versus quickly putting a Band-Aid on my wet floor example. So that's important.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great example, and I think that's often how people approach problem solving in general. Is they're like, they see this symptom that's come up, and they're like, I just want it to go away, right? And as quickly as possible, and I don't want to have to deal with it because it's another, you know, bloody stress that I got to figure out. And so it's easier often, or it seems easier, to just clean up the water on the floor rather than actually being like, why is there water on the floor? And that's an important question, right? Because it didn't just arrive. Like it's a symptom of a problem. And to figure out what that problem is requires effort, and it requires intelligence, and, you know, like really like working through the process. And that's something that, you know, I guess people tend to want to avoid because we don't like problems a lot of the time. They interfere with our plans, right? And yeah.
Yeah, they do. And the other thing, and you know, I'm guilty of this myself, is that it is hard to kind of dig down. You know, it's extra work, and we sometimes like that to-do list. We're just checking things off as quickly as possible, and it's like, well, this was, I solved this, move on to the next thing, where it's not always that easy, and it's, you know, it's going to take some testing, and it's going to, like, going back to my silly example, if I had just simply walked back up there and checked a few minutes later, I would have saw that, all right, this isn't taken care of. I don't need it to become a full-fledged problem again. So kind of putting your head in the sand and say, oh, this is done, I don't have to worry about this again, is the easier thing to do. And sometimes it won't come back. Or the real interesting thing is when it becomes you have an unintended consequence. You fix one thing and then break something else without realizing it till down the road. So it's, right. It's always keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, I mean, you can dig yourself a nice hole if you're not careful, you know, just trying to fix the problems on the surface level rather than really diving deep and figuring out how to adjust course or, like, make a real improvement, right? Yeah,
I'll just jump in there. The other thing that I saw in corporate America, you know, when I was at a large company, was that we would often fix problems in our department or in our team, and we did not consider how it affected all of the other users within the company and clients. So it's like, this looks great for us. This makes our job so much easier. Look how much better our product is. And then find out it's like, hey, did you know, this division now has to do three times the work because you took out this one step? Or the reason that it's there is because our client has told us over and over they really want it. So making sure you have the right people in the room, listening to who the decision makers are, the users are, and then understanding why certain things are the way they are is important too. And, you know, there's a very delicate balance of, you know, we do it because this is how we've always done it. Like, that's a terrible mindset. Don't do that. But not understanding why those things are currently taking place can also lead to, hey, you really made this more difficult for everybody else down the line without even thinking about how it affects them.
Right. And I guess that happens a lot when you have large corporations that sort of subdivide into these sort of self-sustaining entities that don't communicate very well with each other. And everyone's on their own mission, right? And so this department thinks that they're just focused on whatever it is. But because there's little, not always, I suppose, but sometimes there can be little communication between teams or between departments, particularly if you have like a global corporation and you have offices all over the world and in different languages and trying to orchestrate and communicate that to make sure that everything works perfectly is a tricky business, right? And it certainly requires a lot of good leadership and, you know, strong communication within the company and within the teams themselves to figure out, like, what's this, how does everything fit together in this massive puzzle that we're trying to do?
For sure. And most of the time, it's not even with, you know, bad intentions. It's more of, we just, you know, we're concerned with, you know, our division hitting our goals, lowering our budget, and not, you know, not necessarily meaning to do anything with those unintended consequences, just being kind of siloed and having a vision of what's in front of you, and that's what dictates your strategies.
Right, and I suppose it also depends on what your priorities are, right, in terms of, like, as a team, because if your priority is just always the bottom line for your division, then that's going to create problems for other people, even if you don't realize how, because that's not necessarily, because another division's priority, maybe it's their bottom line, but it's not yours. And so they're going to do things that are going to affect you, and you're going to do things that are going to affect them. And if there isn't that really good communication, then you're just going to make life hard for each other, right? And just cause this conflict that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, and I think that prioritization point is a really important one, because, you know, and I had an amazing team leader when I was on that project that really helped us and really would ask whenever we would lose focus of priority of, well, who is the end user? Why are we doing these things? And if your priority is, again, going back to that division example, you know, I want my numbers to look good. I want to hit this quarter's reward. I want this bonus. Not thinking about, well, I actually am building a product for a user. Do they want this? Are they going to pay for this? Is this important? So it is important to prioritize what the goal is. And sometimes without realizing it, you can let that selfish or that more, you know, what's right in front of you or what benefits you kind of dictate your path forward.
Right. And ultimately it would be a balance, right, between the different priorities, because it's never going to be just all in one. And like, it has to just be, this has to be the priority, because if you're running a business, business operates on funds, and you know, you need to take that into consideration. But as you say, like, the user experience needs to be a priority as well, because without that, it doesn't matter how much money you have. Like, it's not going to help you, right? And so that's a careful balance that people, I guess, and you help people figure that out, right? And so how do you help people prioritize? Like, is it simply questioning?
So we will do a pretty in-depth introduction or consultation before we start to figure out what should be addressed first. And there's four areas that we'll dive into. The first thing is kind of the mission or the foundation of any business. And surprisingly, not at least in real estate, that some businesses, you know, why do you do what you do? What sets you apart? We'll start there. And if they can't communicate that to me, they're going to have difficulty communicating that to their clients. So we will, you know, kind of we'll start there. We'll tie in goal setting. We'll also look at the client experience. You know, a lot of times they're great at, you know, here's what I'm great at, here's why I'm the best, here's why you should work with me. All right, so what is your client hearing? Well, I don't know. Oh, well, what's in it for them? That's, you need to think of it kind of there. We'll also go to organizational alignment for kind of the issues we just talked through. Are you part of a bigger company? How does what you're doing reflect on your team, your division, the communication? Is it the same? Is there any kind of overlap? Anything that's not being communicated properly to your clients? And then finally, we'll just focus on problem solving. Are you good at all the rest of that stuff, but things keep coming up that are out of your control? How can we put a framework in place that will help avoid some of these problems, or when they come up, we can quickly make those changes, make those realignments to kind of move forward in a positive way?
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense, right? It's a very logical way to approach dealing with it, right? And sort of making sure that everything's in the right place and people have the right mindset, so to speak, about why they're doing what they're doing and how it's affecting things and, you know, what the end goals of it are. But so in terms of like problem solving, right, because this is a big area for people, and just in personal life, you know, it's very difficult for a lot of people, myself included. Like, problem solving is not easy, right? Particularly if you decide to engage in more complex problem solving, like, it gets worse. But so what kind of structure or framework do you provide? Is there a standard one, or do you custom make it depending on who you're dealing with? Like, how does that look?
Yeah, that's a good question. In general, in most things in my life, although I'm a lawyer by trade and by background, I don't love hard and fast rules, because I always am finding there's exceptions, there's things that don't apply, and it's like, well, why am I learning all these rules, or this is, you know, the six steps if I need to deviate all the time? So I do have a framework for problem solving, with the caveat that you are the expert of your business, you're the expert in what we're talking about, so you need to know when one of these steps might either not apply, you might need to spend more time in it, or you might need to change it or to build it out. So we start with kind of a four-step approach. And it's pretty common: plan, do, check, and adjust. So, and what I've seen, most businesses are really good at planning and doing. So having some sort of strategy, whether it comes from the top, whether it comes from, you know, your team, here's what we're going to do, and then can we execute on that? Planning and doing. Yes, we're good. And unfortunately, that's where it stops. We don't know, do we hit the target that we wanted? Did we reach the right, do we reach the right people? Do we hit our goal? No, we're going to go right back to planning for next quarter, and we're going to do it again. The cycle just keeps repeating until something catastrophic happens. Like, hey, we've been losing money for six straight quarters and had no idea, because we're not, we're not looking at it. So that's where the next part, the checking. Are you actually seeing if your plan was right? Were you going for the right target? Should something have changed? And then lastly, the adjust. All right, what did not happen, and what can we do differently, either this time if we catch it in time, or next time? So that's the starting point. That can we use that four-step framework to have a strategy in place that we can keep an eye on throughout the process of what we're doing. And then for more complex problems, which we're always going to see, there's a few other steps that we'll get into before we get there to understand the difference between a symptom versus the actual problem, to make sure that you're actually solving what is wrong, or what the, for the complex problems, if there's multiple root causes, kind of breaking those out and then taking them by priority, understanding which one you should spend more time on, which one would be have the greatest impact, which one you should get to first, because there's a couple things that are wrong. So in general, the framework is having a plan, being able to execute on it, but not stopping there, making sure that you're checking to make sure the plan is right, and then putting the right changes in place. And then on top of that, for complex problems, are you solving for what's actually wrong?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good framework for it, you know, and it's adaptable, and it's also it's simple but effective, right? Because as you say, like, people, it's quite easy to plan and do, but then you just leave it at that. I mean, even sort of like from my personal experience, I'm an ideas kind of guy, right? And so for me, like, even the execution part of things is a challenge. Never mind the checking and the adjusting, because for me, I'm just like all ideas all the time, right? And so for a big challenge and, you know, sort of growth opportunity, I suppose you could say, for me is to figure out, well, okay, it's all well and good to have the plans. They can sound good, right? And then I can start implementing them. But then if I don't take it forwards, you know, then you're sort of a bit dead in the water, unless you get extremely lucky or something like that. And so it is important to take that step back to be able to say, okay, well, I had a plan and I did this stuff. Did it work? Or what's working? What's not working? How do we change that? And then, you know, readjust, make a new plan. And it's sort of like a cycle, right? And you sort of just keep going forwards. And it's not something that you'll ever really complete, particularly if your sort of general trajectory is for growth, right? You can't end the cycle anywhere. So it's a matter of just being able to figure out where you're at, where you're stuck, where you need support, where you need, you know, maybe so like a coach or something like that, and figure out like how to improve those areas. And I guess that can also be a challenge for people, because a lot of people don't like to ask for help, right? And they'll sort of just stick with the sort of mediocrity of what they can do, instead of bringing in someone who's excellent at what they're not so good at to complement their service, right? So does that come up a lot? I guess that's kind of like team dynamics, though.
Yeah, you said a lot of great things there. The first part being identifying your strengths or what you're comfortable with, and knowing it's like, this is what I'm good at. And then being able to identify, well, I either need to bring, delegate some of this out, bring someone in to help me, or put an extra focus on the other parts, because that's not where my strong suits are. So that's the first step, being able, hey, this is what I'm good at. Here's where I'll focus, and here's how I can complement the things that I do well with outside resources. So being open to that. And, as your question kind of hinted at, that's not always the case. And that's okay, because it took me a long time to get there. So I keep that in mind, that it's one of those things that it does not have an end point, that you're always going to kind of evolving and looking to kind of back to that everyday improvement. But as you mentioned, that kind of growth is the target. That can be one of them. It can be, is your business just changing, and you need to kind of go through some of these steps because outside factors in the market are dictating it, or technology is becoming more prevalent, and you're not doing things the same way that you did 5, 10, 15 years ago, and it's time to make those changes. So there are different reasons to kind of take a step back and have more, call it a strategic or a more planned approach, but just understanding that even if things are good today, great yesterday, that there's going to be a reason to make sure that that's still the way in the future, and that you can always keep an eye on things to make sure that you're delivering on what you promise to your clients, and you have the results for all parties involved, and if not, figuring out why and making those changes.
Right, and that makes sense, right? And so do you find that like people are resistant to change mostly?
always.
I mean, it's a pretty it's a pretty human characteristic, right? Is we don't really like change. I mean, some people embrace it more than others, but yeah.
We'll start there. Some people embrace it more than others, for sure. You know, change is hard because it's generally easier to keep doing the things that you're doing, especially if you have good results. And then, you know, to have someone else come in who's, you know, a coach, you know, it's, why are you telling me what to do? Or, you know, it's, it can be difficult to hear that things could be done differently, could be done better, could be done in a way that you had not thought of before. So having that conversation up front, and just, you know, I mean, I'm open with all of my clients. Here's the things that I have done wrong, am doing wrong, and probably will do wrong in the future. Like I screw things up every day. So, you know, having that mindset for me has kind of freed me that there is no perfect, and there is, you know, the idea is not to keep doing the wrong things over and over and over. It's all right. This didn't work out well. How come? Let's fix it. Move on. So that's important. But the change piece, there's a lot of schools of thought as far as what resistance to change can be. And so being able to identify those with the prospect, with the client, or with just a colleague that I'm working with, on a different type project is important, because change is hard. Resistance to change is real. And you can get it from all different, from, hey, things are okay now, to, you don't know what you're talking about. And being able to respond properly, and given the situation, sometimes a relationship makes sense to move forward and work together. Sometimes it doesn't, if that's the mindset, at least at that time.
Right. And the weird part about it is that, like, as humans, we seem to resist the idea that change is inevitable, even though it's obvious, and we experience it all the time. You know, it might not be immediately inevitable, but that's how it works. Like, the universe evolves and changes continuously, right? And then we sort of come along with our minds and being like, no, I don't want this to change. This needs to be the same. And why can't things be the way they used to be? And sort of just have that really strange relationship with change. And I mean, it makes sense, right? Because it's comfortable. And as you said, if it's producing good results, then it's even more enticing to not change, because the risk sort of seems to be greater than the possible reward. Even though it's not necessarily true, it can certainly seem that way. But I really like your approach of saying, look, we're all human. We make mistakes every day. It's learning. It's changing. I mean, it's learning, and it's growth, and it's opportunity if you allow it to be, right? If you don't allow it to be an opportunity for change, then you're going to just keep doing it. And eventually you'll, you know, succumb to the suffering and be forced to make the change. And so choosing to have that mindset to be able to say, okay, look, I know that I'm not perfect. My company's not perfect. My relationships aren't perfect. You know, nothing is perfect, but we can continue to strive to keep things good and to keep them improving, perhaps. But even if it's just maintenance, right? Like, that's difficult, and that too requires change and adaptability, because things change. I mean, the market changes, people's values change, societies change. Like, there's no way around it. And so you have to have that mindset of like, okay, I'm going to anticipate change. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm going to anticipate that I'm at least going to be open to dealing with it properly. Right. And I guess that's a mindset that people hopefully sort of learn or get to at some point. I wouldn't say that everyone has it, but like, it's probably the easier way to go about doing things.
Yeah. And I mean, as you say, change is inevitable. And, you know, getting to that mindset where you're embracing it to some degree is important. And the other thing that we kind of hinted at, but hadn't directly said, is control. Mm. Is that people want to change things that, you know, are not great. And going back to, well, I want to be the best, or I want to, you know, I want to make more money, or I want to have a bigger house. They want to make those changes because they're in control, or it's beneficial for them. So that's understanding that there are things that we have control over, that we changes we want to make to benefit us, but there are things that are around us that are going to change on other factors that we don't have that control over. So just understanding that there are greater forces than what we want that are at play.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point about control, is because we do want control, and we try and control as many aspects of our lives as we can. And we can do some and not others, and that's difficult, particularly if you can't do the ones that you want to do. But it's an interesting dynamic that comes up, right, with control versus change, and being able to manage that effectively so that you don't get too lost in either side, right? And trying too hard to either prevent change, keep control, or relinquish control and just embrace complete chaos and change. There is a balance somewhere there that you help people figure out, right? Of like, what can you do? What should you do? What's the right thing to do? And even if it's not exactly right, it's like, well, at least we're taking the right step forward, and taking it to a sort of the next level. Or adapting, I guess, is the right word for it.
And I love that you use balance there, because that's one of the main things that both in my personal professional life as well as with my clients, they talk about that. You know, looking for something that's fair, looking for things that are right, something that's hard, but understand that there's a balance to most things, that if you can find where that balance is, from, you know, time you spend on things to the results you get to the effort that you're putting into, like, to all, this is always going to be there usually is a balance to these things. So just understanding that's the case, and then trying to figure out what that balance is always the tricky part. But that is something to keep in mind.
For sure, and that the balance changes, right? Like, to just to bring it back to what we were saying, is it's like, well, you might find a balance for now, but then all of a sudden something happens and you're off balance and you got to readjust and figure out what's your new balance that might not be the same as your old one, but that's just how it goes, right? I mean, you get a promotion and all of a sudden you got to redo things, or you change jobs, you change, companies, or you do something like that, and all of a sudden you're like, fuck, I got to do it again. But that's how it goes, right?
Mm-hmm. And kind of that just reminds me that with the change and the pushback and the control, you know, get from when talking with clients that, you know, we're okay, we don't need this. I'm at a point where I don't need to do anything else. So we'll say, well, you know, do you exercise? Do you work? Yeah, of course I do. Well, do you ever get to a point where you can stop working out, or you don't need, you've reached your end point in exercising? No, I need to do that all the time to get better. Okay. And do you do the same thing every time you exercise? Of course not. You know, there's different muscles, there's different groups, there's different... So it's that same mindset that, you know, I don't run 7 miles every single day because that's the only exercise I need to do. I need to do a bunch of different exercises and I need to change it. And if things aren't working, I need to spend more time here and there. And it's kind of it all goes back to the same kind of mindset. Are you have that growth or that moving forward in your business, in your professional life that you want? And that's kind of what the coaching ultimately is that we're going to take a snapshot of where you are and bring you to where you want to go. And there's going to be different ways to do that for different people.
Right. And so do you also incorporate, like, into your coaching practice, this sort of work-life balance aspect of it, of like trying to manage that? Or are you more on the professional coaching side of things?
Personal life will always come up, especially in real estate, because it's such a gray area of when you're working and when you're not working, because real estate people are generally working, you know, they're working weekends, nights, a lot of the time. So I will let my clients dictate what they're interested in as far as a work-life balance, more than me saying, hey, you need to 6 o'clock at night, turn off your phone or not check email. Like, that's not why they hire me. That's not why they work with me. Mm-hmm. But if they're telling me, and I see this a lot, that, hey, I'm working 100 hours now, I haven't had a week off, you know, had a vacation off in 2 years. So I want to keep my results, but I need to scale back. That's where a coach like me can really help, because we can look at, all right, let's take a look at what your calendar looks like for the last 30 days. Okay, well, I don't really keep a calendar. I just have this list of to-dos. Like, okay, maybe this is an area that we can max, because you're doing really well. Can we kind of maximize your time by using, you know, time blocks or scheduling things out? So if work life is a goal of theirs or something that should be considered, we'll get into it. But it's not something that I push, or because I do think everybody has a different, going back to that balance thing, they've got a different idea of what works for them. So I don't like to push ideas on them, but I will help them find that balance.
No, for sure. And you actually raise an interesting point about how when you're in the middle of something, right, or you're in a routine, let's say, and perhaps it's a little bit crazy, but you're doing it anyway. It's very difficult to be able to see things objectively and take a different approach to it, right? Which is the value of having a coach or someone like that to be able to come in and say, let me objectively, without judgment, come and look at what you're doing, what's going on, and see like where things aren't going so well, or where you might want to make small adjustments, or what you can do to help. Well, you know, sort of on that level where it's like, if it's just you, you don't have a good perspective, right? And that's just the nature of our existence, I suppose, is that you just see things the way you see them, and it's quite difficult to step out of that and be able to evaluate what you're doing objectively, particularly without judgment, right? Because that a lot of times will stop people from doing it. It's not that they can't do it, but it's because of what happens when you do it, right? Like if you're bad at managing time, then taking that step back and looking at your calendar for the past 30 days and saying, look at what I'm doing to myself, right? Like that can be very difficult to do by yourself because all sorts of things come up for you, and you know, you'll be resistant, and you might choose to interpret things in a certain way to make yourself feel better, and you know, sort of just disregard some of the stuff as like one-time things, even though you know that it's not true. But that it really is beneficial to have someone come in and say, let me just take a look, right? I'm not here to say you suck or you're bad at this or you're, you know, you're a bad person or whatever the fear is. It's like, no, like you're just in this pattern of behavior, and you know, I'm here to see what I can help you with, basically, or where you want help, rather. And so, I mean, that's the sort of how I sort of view coaching foundationally, right? Is it's that outside expert coming in and saying, look, you know, this is where things are a bit messy for you, but we can fix it, or we can take steps towards changing it or making improvements along the way. And so does that resonate with you as like a general message?
Yes, it does. A lot of that is, you know, when you start off by saying the objective, non-judgmental voice, I think that's important because you got to build credibility, build trust there to be objective. But you also don't want to just say, oh, no, things are great. You know, you're doing everything right. And then kind of just be the cheerleader when they're asking you to coach. So where are you going back to balance? You need to balance to be objective, but you need to be direct, and you need to be candid, and you need to make sure that that your communications are delivered in a way that is positively received. So you need to have that relationship and that trust built up. As you talk about, you know, when you're the only one doing it, it's very easy to get lost in it. It's very easy to not see an outside perspective. So, I mean, if you've got three people working on something and they're working on it individually, you know, they might do a good job. But if you put the three of them together, 10 times out of 10, the end result of that team is going to be better than if they each had worked on something alone, just because someone's going to ask a question, or have you thought about it this way, or have you, you know, why are you doing it this way? Just having this other set of eyes is so valuable. And that's another thing that, you know, I always didn't. It's amazing how much less I know as I get older. You know, when you're younger, it's like, I know everything. There's nothing else to know. I know it all. And you just realize, not only do I not know it all, I know very, very little. And the more expert opinions, the more people I can talk to, the more feedback loops I can get engaged in, you know, a lot of times it's helpful. You know, it's making sure that's the right feedback, the right people that you're listening to is another issue. But just having the right voices, the right people working with you can transform what you're doing and have exponential benefit to you and your work.
Yeah, and I mean, that's sort of true generally speaking, right? Is that to surround yourself with people who will uplift you and will motivate you and will push you where you need pushing, like that will take you further than anything else, right? Because doing it alone is extraordinarily difficult, right? And most things we don't do alone in life, even if we try to, right? And so being able to utilize people around you, whether it's colleagues or friends or a partner or whoever, or a coach or whoever it is, it's like that's really what's going to empower you to, you know, drive and be successful. And also knowing where the negative side of that is, right? Who are the people that are, you know, bringing you down or giving you shit all the time or making you feel bad or, you know, just contributing negatively to you and your world. And then, you know, there's a matter of how you deal with that. And I mean, it's complicated and case specific, generally speaking, but it's hugely important to have that network of people, or some people call it a tribe, or, you know, a community or whatever it is. It's just that group that will be there to support you. And, you know, it's sort of like common pop psychology, I suppose it would be, where they say that you need to surround yourself with the kind of people that you want to be, right? In order to achieve that level or to become that, because they're going to bring you into this, if they're good, let's say, they're going to bring you into their circle and their sphere and not keep you down or push you away or whatever. It's that joint rising together of coming as a group to do things at a much higher level. And coaching is one of the excellent ways to do that, because that's exactly what you do. You're like a professional community builder, I suppose. you help people with that a lot. But so, yeah, I just wanted to make that point on sort of community in general and how important it is.
Yeah, no, you're spot on that if you surround yourself with the right people that are providing motivation for you to get to where you want to go, it can only help you get there more quickly or have a more direct route versus when you're doing it on your own, you go back, you have more control over it, but you're going to make more mistakes, take more wrong turns, and you may never get there because you don't know where you're going if you don't have those voices.
Yeah, and it's also important to be able to know this about yourself and about other people, is to say, you know, how are these people in my life affecting me and what I'm doing? And what happens when I try to do things differently and take risks and, you know, push for growth and for change? Like, are they on the sidelines cheering me on or supporting me or being like, how can I help you? Or, you know, all positive reinforcement. Or are they saying, no, you can't do it, or don't do it, it's risky, it's blah, 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 that or that. And there are a lot of those people. And that comes down to what we had been saying about the fear of change. And, you know, also a lot of people don't like when you're doing good things because it makes them feel bad about themselves. And that's just their personal battle. But it's true. And I mean, that's how it manifests a lot of the time when people are growing and changing, is that they have to figure out.
Which is crazy, though.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if something good is happening to me, that does not take a good outcome away from you. I never got that. That there's not only, you know, there's not a fixed amount of good things that can happen, which means if good things are happening for me, it's bad for you. Like, it doesn't work that way. So that's strange. But you're right that if someone's doing well, it's like, oh, man, I wish that was me. It's like, well, you know, it's a terrible mindset.
Yeah. It's the sort of the curse of famine thinking, right? Where you think that there's not enough for everyone. And so if someone else gets some, that takes it away from you, means you can't also get it. But that's just not how it works, particularly in the sort of increasing global world that we live in, where there's endless opportunity for everyone who's willing and desiring for it, right? And you see this quite clearly with like the most successful people in the world, in however you define that success, is that they bring people with them. They're not like, I want to be at the top and everyone else can just stay down below, right? It's like, no, they create these intricate networks of support, and they're like, oh, I'm doing well, let me bring you with, you should do well too, I want you to be with me at the top, or whatever it is. And they're always more successful, and often for much longer periods of time, than those who just try and get to the top and beat everyone else and, you know, don't care about anything else. But yeah,
I think that's an excellent point, that it having a mentor and being a mentor should be one of those things that never has an end point either, that you can always help others. There's going to be people who want to get where you are, and you're going to want to get to go where others are. So just keeping that in mind, that to bring others up as you're looking to. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention, versus positive versus negative surrounding, is that sometimes people like that motivation of being told, you can't do this, this is not going to work. And so just knowing yourself, knowing where your strengths are, knowing what drives you, what will get you where you want to go. So if you're one of those, like, well, you're that's a crazy idea, you can't do that, it's like, yeah, watch me type thing, then it's okay to have those voices around you. But knowing what positivity means to you.
That's true. It's an interesting one, that where people, I mean, it's, fairly common, where people sort of take the motivation of the so-called haters and, you know, use it to power themselves forward. I mean, I'm not like that, but I know people who are like that, and they do extraordinary things because of it. And it's just, you're right, it's about knowing yourself and knowing what drives you and what's most important to you, and how to keep that going, right? No, go ahead.
No, I was, yes, it all goes back to, is this, you know, is this helpful to me, knowing where your strengths are and what you need to surround yourself with? I was just going to say, I forgot to grab a power cord, so
I'm happy to sort of end it here. Like, I think this has been a wonderful discussion. Thank you very much. Would you like to just promote your websites? I'll put it all in the description as well, but just so people know.
Sure. No, thank you, Shane. This has been real fun. I think we've got similar perspectives on a lot of things, change in coaching, and this was a good conversation. If people want to check out me or Accomplished RE, or just AccomplishedRE.com, or Mike Salitro on LinkedIn.
Cool. Thanks very much, eh? Hopefully you'll come on again soon. I look forward to it.
Absolutely. This was great. Thank you, Shane.
Thanks. Take care.